Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 24th of April. The Sioux City Journal in Iowa made the decision to dedicate Sunday's page one to an anti-bullying editorial honoring the memory of an Iowa teenager, 14-year-old Kenneth Wayshin, who recently committed suicide shortly after coming out. We must make it clear in our actions and our words that bullying will not be tolerated, said the editorial board. Those of us in public life must be ever mindful of the words we choose, especially in the contentious political debates that have defined our modern times. More importantly, we must not be afraid to act. The journal editor said that this was the first time the newspaper had devoted an entire front page to a single editorial. A lot of newspapers shy away from putting editorials on the front page, the editor said, but we feel that we have to be a strong advocate for our community, and if we don't do that, we're not sure who else is. This hour of the program, we have two guests as we talk about bullying and the tragic consequences of bullying. Deborah Temkin is the Research and Policy Coordinator for Bullying Prevention Initiatives at the U.S. Department of Education, Office of Safe and Healthy Students. Deborah, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
And Sagna Woodson is also with us. She is a licensed social worker, an author, and an educator. She has more than 14 years of experience working with children, teens, and families. Sagna, thank you so much for being with us as well.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
You hear these stories and they just fill you with horror, and some of us think, how in the world could this still be happening? Aren't we in an age where we're supposed to be more tolerant and more compassionate and more understanding? And yet, teen suicide is way up there, and this kind of event is all too frequent. Why?
Which one of us do you want us to respond?
Sagna, you want to start?
Sure, I'd be happy to start. I mean, I have so many things to say, I don't even know where to start. You know, bullying with kids, you're right, has been around forever. And, you know, you ask the question, how can it still be happening? You know, I always think about it in terms of, like, thank God we're talking about it already. It's not a new thing. It's something that's been going on and on and on forever. I think it's more in the media now because of the new ways that kids can bully each other through technology, the fact that it's a 24/7 experience for kids. But this has been going on with kids forever, and I hate all the tragedies that are behind it, but I'm grateful for the attention that's finally being paid to it, because maybe we can start to make some progress on this issue now.
Sagna, you've been asked, is bullying really worse today than it was when we were kids? Your answer to that is?
Well, it's interesting. I think it's pretty bad across the ages. You know, depending on who you ask, I think, you know, one of the things that Lee Hirsch, the director of the bullying documentary, has said is that after screenings of his movie, he's had people approach him that were bullied 10, 20, 30, 50 years ago that still have these raw emotions mm-hmm. about what it felt like to be bullied. And they're saying, you know, at the time they never felt like there was anyone they could talk to. They felt like they were all alone in their experience. And now the fact that the media is paying more attention to the issue, you know, that the documentary has stirred such a national conversation, finally they're able to talk about it. So is bullying worse than before? I don't know, because you talk to people, you know, from decades ago, and it sounds pretty painful to them as well. The difference, I think, that we're seeing now with kids is that bullying is a 24/7 phenomena. It used to be that kids were bullied at school, but home could be a refuge. And now with cell phones and social media and text messaging, et cetera, kids have no refuge and no respite from cruelty.
Let's look at the issue here that Kenneth had come out just before, about a month before he committed suicide. The reports of his life say that before he came out, he'd been a popular teen at South O'Brien Community School. After he came out, he was taunted in the hallways, vilified on Facebook, and received threatening messages on his cell phone. This for coming out, for saying he was gay?
Well, I think if you look at, you know, bullying statistics and rates, they say that kids who identify themselves as gay are bullied, you know, 9 to 10 times higher rate than other kids. And suicide rates among homosexual children are also at 4 to 5 times the national average. So, you know, when you look at who is being bullied, bullies pick targets that they perceive as weaker than themselves. Or they pick targets who they don't think will be able to stand up for themselves or won't have social support. And kids who identify themselves as gay, unfortunately, fall into that category of not having as much social support. It's an awful thing.
And yet we've heard these statistics, Deborah. We're living in an era where more states are passing gay marriage legislation. We're hearing that among young people, when you look at polling, at least in this country, there's much more acceptance of gay marriage than among people who are older. So why this intense bullying among very young people?
Well, I think it has to do with some still deeply ingrained societal values that are transferred down to kids. And unfortunately, when LGBT kids or questioning youth are growing up in an environment where they perceive there to be a homophobic bias, they can feel very unsupported, and that contributes to this larger picture of them not feeling safe at school.
Could you answer that, Signa, as well?
I would echo everything that Deborah just said. You know, I think these are kids who feel very unsupported by their peers, and I think there are peers that maybe don't hold those same prejudices, but they're terrified to jump in for fear that they're going to be the next target.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, those LGBT kids really feel like they are all alone.
You've done counseling of these teens. Let's start with those who have been bullied rather than the bulliers. What can you recommend as a counselor to make them feel that their lives are worth living and that they don't deserve to be treated this way? They're human beings who have, we hope, good, full lives ahead of them. How do you boost self-esteem? How do you get young people to ignore those threats and taunts?
Well, you know, talking about young people in general, not just LGBT young people, I think that one of the most important things is to teach kids skills for how to cope with bullying when it happens. And, you know, that has to do with self-esteem, but it has to do with a whole range of things, like knowing how to stand up for themselves, knowing how to assert themselves, knowing that bullies will continue to pick on them if bullies perceive them as weak. So how to appear strong in sort of their body language, as well as the way they assert themselves. They tell the bullies to, hey, stop, knock it off. That's not how I want to be treated. And I think one of the most important keys is this idea of support. When kids know that they have other people behind them, whether it is a parent, whether it's a teacher, whether it's a school administrator, or whether it's friends, that kind of connection offers protection from the impact of bullying. So one of the things we have to do is keep kids connected.
Mm-hmm. We also have to deal with a mentality that would have young people bully each other, Deborah. How do we do that? What creates the kind of person who would taunt somebody because he or she is gay or of a different color or heavy or whatever the reason might be? Why do young people do that? Why don't we have a generation that's more compassionate?
Sure. Well, there's no single reason that someone chooses to bully, and sometimes they don't even realize what they're doing is bullying. A lot of times, those who bully may have their own issues. They may have some issues going on at home. They may be struggling in school, and they may be wanting to express that in some way and not knowing the proper avenues to get help from that, and so they may be taking it out on their peers. Others may be actually trying to make their way in their social communities. So they're trying to gain status and popularity, and sometimes they think the only way to do that is to put someone else down. So in order to try to prevent that, we need to give those students more opportunities for leadership. more opportunities to make friends and gain status and popularity without having to bully others to make themselves that way. We should remember that those who bully are not rejected or have low self-esteem, as we may think. Oftentimes, they're very well connected in their social networks, and so we have to address that fact as well.
It seems to me as though we're missing something here, that no child should be growing up thinking that it's okay to put other people down to gain momentum, to receive social status. Something seems off to me.
And that's very true. And one of the best ways to do that is to establish a clear message at school that bullying will not be tolerated. Now, this is different than saying there's zero tolerance, which tends to imply that if someone bullies, they'll get kicked out of school. But when we say no tolerance, we mean that teachers will consistently take action and help bullies change their behavior. When they do that, they can help children learn what is appropriate and what is not. We know that kids can be aggressive even starting in preschool. This is a natural tendency for kids who want something to be aggressive to get it. The key is to teach them the appropriate ways to get what they want.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit more, Signe, because we know that young people are using their cell phones all the time. They're texting. They're on Facebook. Has it made it much easier to do this kind of bullying because you can be relatively anonymous?
Absolutely. I think all the time there are things that kids would never say to each other face-to-face if they were looking at each other eyeball to eyeball, and if they had the immediate feedback that you get when you're in a direct, you know, one-on-one conversation with people. But through the cover of, through the cover of technology, through the fact that sometimes things can be posted completely anonymously, it's very difficult for kids. You know, law enforcement can trace things back, but it's very, very difficult for kids to sort of trace things back and definitively say where the message came from. So you have this cover of anonymity, and you also have the power to disseminate things to a wide audience very quickly. It's no longer just saying something mean eyeball to eyeball to someone. It's spreading a vicious rumor or an embarrassing photo to a whole class at a time or beyond. When you're using Facebook, it's to a network of thousands or millions.
So how do we counter that?
I think there's a lot of things we can do. I think it starts with adults. I really do. I think it's important that parents are aware of what their kids are doing online. They know the sites their kids visit. They ask for their kids' passwords. One of the best suggestions I've ever heard was that, if kids are using social media sites like Facebook, that parents ask to follow their kids, or at least there's another trusted adult that, is following the kids. So parents have some knowledge of what is going on. And I also think it's very important that parents are establishing rules about technology use, and parents are setting guidelines for kids on what is an ethical use of technology. And by the same token, I think that is the school's responsibility as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe we need a lot more classes and a national conversation about what's an ethical way to live.
I think you're right. I hope that's coming. I hope that is one of the things that comes out of this whole discussion, this whole tragic epidemic that we're seeing.
Deborah, the Sioux City Journal did this front page editorial. Would it be just a drop in the bucket, or would it make a difference if every single newspaper in the country did the same thing and we heard reports on the epidemic of bullying, on special reports on all the major news channels and cable stations and all of the radio stations in the whole country, no matter what their political leaning? Would that make a difference?
I definitely think that would make a difference, and we've seen that already in the last couple of years. If you look back before 1999, when really the national conversation on this started around the Columbine tragedy that occurred in 1999, no one was talking about this. Bullying was really seen as a rite of passage. Kids will be kids. This is something kids have to go through to grow a backbone. But as was mentioned, adults still have the scars from when they were kids, when they experienced bullying. And so this is not something that we can just sweep under the rug. And so the fact that the Sioux City Journal did publish that editorial, the fact that news reports across the country, across many different media platforms have really taken up the issue of bullying is very important and started the national dialogue. But we do need to remember that awareness isn't enough. We all have a role to play and take action. It's not just someone else's responsibility. We all have to set a tone that bullying is not okay and that we all have to take certain action steps. The schools have responsibility. Parents have responsibility. Even those in the community have a responsibility to make sure the message is sent that bullying is not okay.
I'm sure we're going to hear from many people who remember those incidents that took place years and years ago. Every time we do a show of this nature, that happens, and it's astounding to me how deep a mark it makes on a person so that they remember exactly what happened and exactly how they felt many years ago. We're talking about bullying this hour. Sioux City Journal made the decision on Sunday's paper to publish an anti-bullying editorial that took up the whole front page of the paper. This in memory of an Iowa teenager, 14-year-old Kenneth Weishen, who died of a self-inflicted injury on April 15th after he was undergoing harassment, continual harassment from classmates at South O'Brien High School. He had come out to his friends and family a month prior to his suicide. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, and you may want to get a Facebook conversation going on this as well, and you can do that at the Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program, Clint Hill will join us, Special Agent, United States Secret Service, who was assigned to the First Lady, Jackie Kennedy, right after the election in 1960 and stayed with her after the assassination, a year after the assassination. He writes really with very deep respect for her. And it's amazing to hear the perspective of somebody whose life he had to sacrifice in order to protect her and her family. He had some marvelous travels to India and Pakistan and Greece and Paris and Italy. But he also has a memory that has been very hard to take out of where it's been lodged in his brain all of these years. He was with her and was the Secret Service agent who was climbing on top of the limousine right after President Kennedy had been shot. He accompanied Jack Kennedy to the hospital. He put Jack Kennedy's body on a gurney at Park Lawn Hospital, and he had to talk to Bobby Kennedy about the seriousness. And it really was very, very, very hard for him. It's quite a book, and he'll be with us hour two of our show. All right, to your phone calls, 800-486-8655 is our number. Andrea in Spring Green, hi. Andrea, are you there?
I'm here.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Hi. My question is, if your guest has any comments about a constitutional amendment banning gay marriage. I feel that is probably bullying coming from the highest level in this country. I'm a little nervous. I've never called it in the radio before.
Oh, don't be nervous. It's just us. And we're happy to hear what you have to say. Signa?
I'm trying to think of how to answer that question in a non-political way. I will tell you this. I think that adults are role models for kids in all senses of the word. And I think the way that we conduct ourselves, including political discourse, no matter which side of the coin you're on, really impacts kids. And, you know, it only takes this presidential election cycle to show the words we're using. You know, there are times I have two daughters. They're 8 and 6. And I don't want them to watch the news because I don't want them to know that this is how adults behave. You know, I'm trying to set examples for them, you know, as Kathleen's been talking about teaching kids compassion and to talk in civil ways to each other. And then we turn on the television and watch, you know, adults in the news, the leaders of our country, speaking about all kinds of topics, but particularly, you know, a gay marriage amendment in such cruel and awful ways. So do I think that that sets the tone for how kids are treating each other? Absolutely. And do I think it's shameful? Yes.
Deborah, what do you think?
I couldn't agree more. Adults are role models for kids, and what they say directly translate into what kids are telling each other. So I think adults really need to think about how their actions are going to translate into what kids do to each other.
Andrea, anything else?
No, I just wanted her to comment on that, because I do feel that it comes from the top down, and when you set that tone for the entire country and then wonder why these children are committing suicide, you know, we've got a real problem.
Thank you for your call. Thank you. Andy in Lake Geneva. Hi.
Hi, Kathy. I just think this conversation is just not realistic. I mean, you're talking about a 14-year-old. You're talking about young boys loaded with testosterone, surrounded by a society and movies and in video games that glorifies toughness, glorifies the boy getting the girl, however he gets the girl. And then you have this child come out and say they're gay. I mean, if there was ever a solution, the solution is don't ask, don't tell. And if you're a father of a gay boy or a gay girl, you say, hey, look, kids, keep it to yourself, all right? There's a trouble out there. We have a society that is separate and apart from homophobic. You've got a society that inculcates toughness, getting girls. And so you're going to teach a young boy, okay, who's going through this period of time, compassionate. It just doesn't, you've got a whole society working against you. And so I just think it's unrealistic. And using a don't ask, don't tell for these kids is the best bet. Because as you pointed out, there was this boy who was popular, but as soon as he announced that he was gay, he got the proverbial crap beat out of him. So, you know, there's somewhere where you just have to kind of keep it to yourself and move along. I know growing up in high school, there were kids that were obviously gay, but they kept it to themselves. They didn't come out, and they avoided problems accordingly. Anyway, that's my comment.
All right, Signe.
Well, you know, one of the things we've been talking about is a culture shift, and that we need to create a culture of tolerance for one another and an intolerance of bullying. So, you know, I'm sorry to hear that the caller, you know, feels like we're oversimplifying, but I guess in reverse, I feel like saying that, you know, the young man should just deny who he is or keep it to himself, and not be able to reach out to other people, I don't find that acceptable. You know, I would say that that's an oversimplification, and we have a larger responsibility as parents and as communities and as a nation to create some tolerance for the fact that we're all different in our own way.
Deborah?
I think it's important to mention that kids get targeted not only because they are out and proud of their sexual orientation, but also because they're perceived to be gay. And so it's not just not telling. It's about creating that environment where it's an acceptable way to be. It is supported, and you are supported for who you are. This is why it's important for schools to consider having clubs like Gay Straight Alliances. Kids can go form those and create a safe and supportive environment where kids can go and feel like they are supported in their environment.
How many clubs are there like that in high schools around the country, Gay Straight Alliances?
I don't have the exact statistics. You can find statistics from things like the GSA Network or the Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network. They keep statistics on those. But it's important to note that those clubs are allowed in schools if schools have other extracurricular clubs. So if there are other clubs that are not academically related, schools are obliged to allow those clubs to form under the Equal Access Act.
I'm just wondering generally if we're talking a handful here, or if responding to the problem, a lot of school districts have said, we need a program like this.
They exist in schools across the nation.
Warren in Shorewood. Hi.
Yes, good morning. I'm 48 years old, and when I was a kid in elementary school, I was bullied. Like, you know, I was in fifth grade, the sixth grade bully would beat me up or whatever, and I'd always fight back. When I was in high school, there'd be, you know, tough kids, and, you know, they'd break my glasses, but I'd always fight back. I'd break a finger or snap a toenail or do whatever, pull some of their hair, grab their ear, and I it seemed like whenever I fought back, the bully would go away. And when I was 35 years old, in the working world, I was attacked at in my workplace by a bully who was the leader of a gang. And everybody thought he would just beat me up, and I fought back. And that's my policy, and that's what I tell kids, fight back. The worst thing you could do is enable one of these bullies. And if I'm bullied tomorrow, I'm going to fight back. And it's not just childhood. It goes out through all human, through the whole lifespan. You're going to be bullied. I'm telling you, people, push back.
But, Warren, wouldn't you have preferred not to get hurt? Isn't there another way to do this?
When I'm having pain inflicted on this last case, when I was 35 years old, this guy had me in a headlock and was grinding my thyroid gland with his fist.
Ah.
Okay, at that point, I had to grab an ear and stick my finger in his ear hole and physically beat him off. Otherwise, he could have killed me or given me a serious injury. After that, the guy went away.
Cigna.
I agree with you. I might not necessarily, go to schools and, I wouldn't stand in front of a school assembly and encourage kids to physically fight back as their first option. But I agree wholeheartedly with you that bullies look for people that they perceive as weaker than them. And sometimes that's physically, and more often with boys, that's a physical issue. I think with girls, they pick victims that they perceive as weaker socially. And that's who they go for. And when kids stand up for themselves, whether it's what Warren is saying, sort of physically fighting back, or just, verbally letting the bully know that they're strong and they're not going to lay down and be a passive victim, I think the bully often does go away. I think that's one of the most effective things that we can teach our kids is to fight back, if not physically, but still standing up for themselves.
But you're also saying that what he did physically is okay, so we need to teach young people how to fight, how to physically fight?
I'm not saying that we need to teach kids how to physically fight. I don't think that needs to be, part of a formal curriculum or a formal education. I think that when, if there's an issue in school and two kids are caught fighting, I don't think that it's a simple matter of, both people being expelled. Sort of like the zero tolerance. I think it's important for adults to look into what exactly was going on. And if kids are in that position where they are defending themselves, I think we need to look at that.
Deborah,
again,
what do you
think,
Deborah?
I'm not condoning physical, responses per se, but I do think it's important that kids stand up for themselves, and I think it's important that they're not punished for standing up for themselves.
Deborah, what do you think?
Well, I think it's important to remember that part of the definition of bullying is that there is a power imbalance between the person who is bullying and the person who is being bullied. And oftentimes, even if they do stand up for themselves, they may not be successful. This is why it's very important to get an adult involved, to tell a teacher, and for bystanders to step in as well. We know that when peers step in, when a bullying case happens, bullying will end very quickly. And some of those actions, if a bystander does not feel safe to step into the immediate action, just supporting the student who is bullied afterwards can have a huge effect. I don't recommend that kids fight back. There are, of course, disciplinary policies, and what ends up happening is schools will treat both the person who is bullying and the person who was being bullied the same. And that's not okay, because we know that there was that power indifference between the person who is bullying and the person who is being bullied. And so what we recommend is that the person who is being bullied get an adult involved and make sure they are clear about what is happening to them.
Thanks, Warren, for the call. Rich in Rhinelander. Hi.
Hi. This conversation has taken an interesting turn, and I don't think there's anything wrong about talking about gay kids in particular, but I saw the movie Bully, the Bully Project movie, 2011, over last weekend at the Oriental Donor Landmark in Milwaukee. And it's worth the price of admission just for the father who narrates the story of his son, who may have been a gay kid who committed suicide. But I guess what I want to say is if we want to improve adult life, we have to start in K-12. And one place to start is kind of reviewing our memories of what others have said about bullying. Read Ray Bradbury's short story, The Playground, which reveals that childhood is not a joyous time of life, but a hellish nightmare. I got a copy of it by accident when I was 9 years old in 1953 because my parents owned a resort and people left magazines in the cottages, magazines that I was supposed to dispose of, but they left Esquire, and a Ray Bradbury story was in that, and trust me, that helped me. Kathleen, because this is National Poetry Month, I just want to say that County Cullen's poem Incident kind of captures it all, because people are just sometimes mean. He wrote Incident, and it says, "Once riding in old Baltimore, heart filled, head filled with glee, I saw a Baltimorean keep looking straight at me. Now I was 8 and very small, and he was nowhat bigger. And so I smiled, but he poked out his tongue and called me nigger. I saw the whole of Baltimore from May until December. Of all the things that happened there, that's all that I remember." I bet whether you asked unpopular or popular adults who were that in high school, there are strong gay kids who come to the defense of popular kids who are under attack because they got on a cheerleading squad or something and somebody else didn't. And so this is an important program, but it's not all about being gay in school. It's simply that people are jealous and mean and petty, as in our current presidential campaign. So thank you for the program, but I just wanted to say that we need to go back and think about how simple it is to hurt someone and scare someone with the simplest of things that we do as a power play anywhere in the workplace, everywhere. Bullying goes on everywhere. So
sure
I guess that's
is.
What I'm saying.
Thanks, Rich. Thanks for the call. Signe, you want to respond?
Well, I do. I thank Rich for that call as well, because I think that's an excellent point to make, is that bullying happens across the board. And we've seen some high-profile and very tragic suicides among LGBT youth, but we've also seen tragic suicides among kids who identify themselves as straight. And we've seen, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of kids who are not driven to suicide as an option, but who are bullied every single day. You know, 160,000 students stay home every day from school in the U.S. due to bullying. So, you know, I think Rich underscores an excellent point that this is happening to all kids and even to adults.
Here's an email from Bernie in Elkhorn. "From my experience as a former high school teacher for 5 years, as well as a step-parent and a grandparent, I offer the following thoughts. Bullying is prevalent. A two-pronged approach is needed. One is to actively solicit students to talk about whether or not this is occurring to them, likely through guidance counselors. The other is for teachers and administrators to have a zero-tolerance approach. The problem is that the bullies likely have parents who don't care about their behavior and who may defend their kids no matter what. Such students need to be suspended a few times and then expelled. This is something the administrators and school board members are likely to resist, but it's the only way to stop the problem. Those who are bullies, it's the only way to stop that problem." Deborah?
Well, we do say that zero tolerance is actually a misdirection in bullying prevention for a number of reasons. First, simply suspending or expelling a student doesn't help them change their behavior. And we know that these behaviors do persist into adulthood. And so if you don't give the person who's bullying help and guidance and also address some underlying issues they may have, they're not being helped at all. And we have to remember that all students deserve an education. And so simply throwing them out of school is not going to help anyone, especially if they do come back from a suspension, they haven't learned to change their behavior necessarily. We also think that zero tolerance is a misdirection simply because incidents of bullying are not always as severe as someone would perceive them to need to be in order to justify suspending or expelling a student. For instance, if a case of bullying is teasing, calling mean names, a teacher may not want to report that as bullying because they fear that that student is going to get suspended or going to get expelled, and they don't see the crime fitting the punishment, so to speak. This is why we really do encourage considerations of other forms of consequences that help teach and help inform those who bully about their behavior.
We go to Brett in Oshkosh. Hi, Brett.
Hi, how are you doing?
All right, Brett, how are you?
Good, I'm doing well. Hey, I just wanted to pick up kind of where that email was, too. You know, just through my daily wanderings, I really see kids starting at real young, and I think these kids are...
These kids are what, Brett? Oh, Brett's gone. Sorry. I don't know what he was going to say, so what can you do? Sandra in Cottage Grove. Hi.
Hello. Thank you for this topic. I apologize for not looking into my research here, but I had heard that in some states that I don't think the legislation has been passed, but it is being written on bullying laws, but it's almost like the opposite of bullying law. So if you are the bully and you're perpetrating the bullying, but it's based on your religious beliefs, you can't be prosecuted by any hate law crimes, or you're pretty much covered because of your religious belief.
Deborah.
There are bills pending in several states that have that sort of language. There was a bill that had considered it in Minnesota, but it was overruled once that bill actually did pass several months ago. That language was not included. It is something that will need to be explored very closely in how that is written and how that would be implemented.
Thank you, Sandra, for the call. We're going to continue phone calls in a moment. We're talking about bullying this hour of the program, our conversation prompted by the Sioux City Journal making the decision this past Sunday to devote an entire front page to an anti-bullying editorial because of the death of an Iowa teenager who committed suicide shortly after announcing that he was gay. 14-year-old Kenneth Wayshen killed himself on April 15th after he was harassed continually from classmates at South O'Brien High School. His mother said that many of his peers turned on him. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. The conversation is going on the Kathleen Dunn Show on Facebook. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The second hour of our program this Tuesday, Clint Hill will join us. Clint's new book is Mrs. Kennedy and Me. He would not have been able to write this book for years and years and years because he was the Secret Service agent for First Lady Jackie Kennedy during the whole time that she was First Lady and was with her and had to transfer the president's body from the limousine he was in after he was assassinated to the gurney to take him up to the hospital. And but there are lovely moments in the book as well. Clint Hill, Secret Service, will join us, hour two of our show. All right, back to phone calls. And our next caller is Bill in Madison.
Thank you. My K-12 spanned from 1958 to 1970. And I was bullied pretty much throughout that time, throughout most of it anyway, and both physically and psychologically. And as for the psychological part, they didn't have Facebook back then, but they had things called slam books where they would buy a ring binder kind of a thing, one of those spiral notebooks, and they would put your name on it, and everyone, you know, who hated you would write the most vicious, awful things, cover the pages full of it, and then they would sneak it into your book pack. and you come home with your homework and you'd find this book with all these rumors and all these things in there, and then they would, if they wanted to get you. I mean, they didn't have Facebook, but they had low-tech sort of equivalents of Facebook. As far as the physical, my problem was that my dad moved around a lot as part of his job, and so I was often in different parts of the country, and I was always the kid with the funny accent, and also I exhibited a lot of behaviors that many people today might even diagnose as borderline Asperger's syndrome. I was very smart, but I was just a weird, nerdy kid, and I discovered that, when I got into high school, I suddenly got very I shot up, and I got to be over 6 feet tall, and suddenly I was very large and very big and strong. And I ran into a bully that had been tormenting me since elementary school. I found him in a bathroom by himself, and I broke his jaw.
Oh, my gosh.
I loosened his teeth. I broke his cheekbones, and I broke his nose. And when he got out of the hospital, he didn't bother me again, and he told his friends not to bother me again.
Signe, what do you say to that?
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
What can you say? I mean, I guess I want to hear, what lesson Bill took from that. You know, were there criminal charges at the end of that? I mean,
Bill, were there charges?
No, there were not. Yeah. And but my point is that I've never known a bully who reaches high school as a bully who ever changes his behavior as an adult.
Deborah.
There are certainly parallels to draw between bullying in childhood and so-called bullying in adulthood, but we have to remember that when bullying does happen between adults who are over the age of 18, there are criminal laws that apply that don't apply when youth are under the age of 18, which is exactly why it's very important for us to address the behavior directly with those who bully. And help them change their behavior, not just to punish them. I do want to make one quick correction to a statement I had made before. It was Michigan that was considering that bill, not Minnesota.
Okay, thanks, Bill, for the call. Leslie on Facebook writes, prevention must start in preschool by teaching children about the differences and similarities, race, family structure, culture. Schools are beginning to institute anti-bias curriculum, giving children a chance to learn about others in a safe place, guided by teachers. Stereotypes and prejudices can be prevented if we deliberately take time in school to break them. The younger, the better.
I'm so glad Leslie wrote that. I think that's such an important point. One of the things that I always say that schools really can do, there's so many, places where schools and teachers feel helpless and overwhelmed by this problem, but one of the things that schools can do is incorporate social skills lessons to create this culture of kindness and tolerance and intolerance for bullying. And studies show that in schools where anti-bullying programs are implemented, bullying can be reduced by up to 50%. I think that's a pretty big deal. My background has been in writing some of these programs for younger kids, because I think a lot of what exists right now is targeted for middle and high school students, where they say bullying peaks. And my point is always, if bullying is peaking in middle school, then it has its roots in elementary school and even preschool. So what can we do for kids very early on, to give them some skills, to know how to cope, to sort of change their behavior in the first place? The ultimate goal is to stop bullying before it starts. I thank Leslie for writing that in. I think that's a great point.
Yes, it is. Thanks, Leslie. Kim and Racine, hi.
Hi. Just a couple things. I'm really glad you have this program, because two things. It makes it very difficult. I mean, I know there are bullying programs that are in play in schools everywhere. Norway started it back in the 70s, no bullying policy. But what makes it tough is if you grow up in a family where you're bullied, where you're abused, you learn in school what you're not supposed to do, and then you go home. I remember my mother telling my brother, hey, beat the heck out of the kid. Don't back down. Don't be a sissy. That was for my mother. Secondly, if kids are not taught anti-bullying, anti-hazing, it goes into adulthood. My niece is in her first year at a university in the Pacific Northwest. She's being hazed. She woke up the other day to find urine poured all over her belongings.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes, exactly. And, of course, and this is in Washington State, and, of course, there are statutes that are, you know, there's laws against hazing, but, of course, nobody wants to talk about it. The kids don't report it because they have a real, real fear of any retaliation. So this is still a huge, huge problem. And the gal that sent in the email to you is right. It has to start when kids are in elementary school and the parents have to be there with them, or it's not going to stick.
Thank you, Kim. Deborah.
I fully agree, and I think, you know, what's great is that schools, there is no one-size-fits-all solution. Schools really do need to look at what they are doing currently and what they can add, what they can do differently to make sure that bullying is addressed.
And, you know, I want to add one more thing.
Sure.
Kim brought up a great point that a lot of times kids don't report what's going on for fear of retaliation. You know, I think statistics show that only 1 out of 3 kids who are bullied tell adults, and it may, you know, anecdotally, I think it's even less than that. You know, I'm a parent of young kids. I'm surrounded by, you know, moms of young kids, and we all like to think, you know, we're providing these loving homes for our kids, and we tell them they can tell us anything. Why don't they tell us? But I think that bullying brings such humiliation to kids that they don't want to talk about it to their teachers, they don't want to talk about it to their friends, and the last thing they want to do is admit to their parents that they're being treated like this at school. So I think that's another, you know, whole issue that we face is how do we make it safe and acceptable for kids to reach out to adults and let adults know what's going on in their world.
We all need a confidant, don't we? We really need somebody we can just pour everything out to.
Absolutely.
And I'll add to that that this is why it's important to start the conversation long before kids ever are experiencing bullying, so they know that it's safe to go talk to an adult, whether that adult be a teacher at school or their parents. Mm-hmm. If that conversation has already happened, they know that that's a safe space and their parents or their teacher are not going to judge them for their experience.
Josie in Sheboygan. Hi.
Yes, good morning. I mean, I'm 67 years old, and I have, you know, I have a vivid memory. I just happen to have one of those memories, and I can recall I always had a weight problem when I was a kid. My mother fed us like crazy, but, you know, there was teasing, and there was always meanness, and I've asked myself my whole life, why is it? I mean, these kids start very, very young. I don't believe that they're influenced necessarily by their parents, although it can happen. But I've always asked myself, why are people so mean? And then they grow up, the psychopaths of our society grow up to be so-called successful, you know, making millions of dollars one way or another. And I always ask myself, well, I wonder how many nets they stepped on.
Signe, why are people so mean?
Oh, I mean, it's a great question. I know Deborah sort of touched on this. There's no single reason, but much of it has to do with, you know, this issue of social status. I think kids who bully enjoy a sense of power and increased social status when they bully others, you know, when they push other people down. A lot of kids who bully I think Deborah mentioned that it's a myth that kids who bully just have low self-esteem. Generally, that's not true. More commonly, they're kids who are overly concerned with popularity. They like to dominate. They like to be in charge of others. And they bully because, unfortunately, we have a culture in which bullying works. You know, they get the affirmation that they're looking for. And I think that's why a key is really creating a culture in which bystanders rally around the victim instead of around the bully.
Hmm. Don't you wish sometimes, Deborah, that we could live backwards? Because sometimes when you're older, it makes a lot more sense, and those things that you just can't get when you're young, you grow into them. Many people do.
I think that's very true, you know, and I think that's why a lot of the focus is on bullying among youth. We know that people are still aggressive when they get into adulthood, and we know that laws exist when people are adults. But kids are affected much more than adults may be by the same actions, and we have to recognize that. Where a kid experiences teasing, and a parent might say, oh, well, you know, they're not being serious, they're not meaning to hurt you, you know, just let that roll off your back. Kids may not have that sense yet and may be very affected by this. And this is one of the main reasons we have to address bullying.
Thank you both so much for being with us. Our guest this hour, Deborah Temkin, Research and Policy Coordinator for the Bullying Prevention Initiatives at the U.S. Department of Education, Office of Safe and Healthy Students. Signe Whitson, licensed social worker, author of Friendship and Other Weapons, Group Activities to Help Young Girls Aged 5 to 11 Cope with Bullying. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, and thanks to Rhonda Fanning as well for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. We have news coming up momentarily, and we'll return with what should be a pretty compelling hour with Clint Hill. Stay with us.